Pot Radio Network is pleased to present Encounter, a public service program here on KSIV that spotlights local Christian events and provides information and resources to enrich your lives. And now, your Encounter host, Judy Redlich.
Welcome to Encounter. I'm Judy Redlich, and I'm so pleased today to introduce you. You probably know him if you live in the city of St. Louis and if you've been around a while, Bishop Raphael Green. He is the pastor and founder of Metro Christian Worship Center, and that's on Potomac Avenue in the heart of South City. Bishop Green, I'm so happy that you could come today and be a part of the show.
Great to be with you, Judy. Been a long time.
It has been a long time. Now, Raphael says it's been a long time. Well, I met him when I was working for KNLC Channel 24, and the station had just gone on the air, and we were doing telethons, and he had such a great voice. And so he was singing on the station, and we just struck up a friendship because I wasn't that much older than he was. And now look at us, Raphael.
Here we are.
Here we are. By the grace of God. So I asked Bishop Green to come today. We're going to talk about how do you reach people who are multi-generational and living in the urban areas.
Great.
And he's had so much experience. How do you have a transformational church? And maybe some of you pastors out there who are listening are going, you know, I just am losing my fire for pastoring because I don't see the results. Well, maybe Bishop Green hasn't seen the results either for a long time. So we're going to talk about those issues today on Encounter. And by the way, we want to make sure that you realize that you can listen to Encounter on the Bot Radio Network website, go to the St. Louis page, and you can see all of our archives there because you might want to share this show with someone else or even your pastor. Bishop Green, give us a little bit of a summary about your life. But first of all, when did you start singing?
Well, the short of it is that many years ago now, I had an experience a couple of years before. My parents were Christians, but we had an experience where I had a little brother that died. I was about four, and we were getting ready to go to vacation Bible school. The pastor was coming to pick us up, and he died, got choked on a piece of grapefruit.
And oh, wow.
I think that was one of the first times that I really became aware, you know, of the brevity of life. And I don't know why it impacted me like that. Many of my friends tell me normally a four-year-old wouldn't be, but I was. And a couple of years later, when I heard the gospel, living in North St. Louis, God spoke to my heart and made me aware of my need for Him. My parents were Christians, like I said, and so we were always in church, but I had never really come into that realization of a need for a relationship with Jesus, even though I'd heard it quite a bit. And back in those days, inner city life was similar to now, but, you know, today is much more challenging, much worse. But for us, it was difficult in everything, racism, the money issues, the whole nine. And after I gave my life to Christ, the Lord began to deal with me about ministry. And I didn't necessarily want to do that per se. I wanted to serve Him, but I didn't really know how to go about doing that. I didn't really relate to a lot of the style that I was around. I enjoyed it, but I didn't relate to that.
And the style, what do you mean?
You know, for those of us in African-American black background, you know, the style of preaching, some of the music, being young, I wanted more of an updated sound, and that kind of thing. And so that's what I mean by style. I enjoyed it. I loved it. I wept in those services and was really ministered to, but it just didn't seem to fit who I was as a person. And God, you know, of course, showed me that what He wanted to do with my life was somewhat different. And so I began to, you know, learn more about Him and eventually embraced the call of God upon my life to pastor, to preach, to teach the Word of God, things of that nature. And how to actually impact a community in a way that would bring him glory, but also be of good to humanity. You know, often you have that false dichotomy that some seem to think it's all about just being in church, you know, and then there are others that think, well, it's all about what we do for the community, but it's really both.
It's really both, isn't it? It's a crossover.
Yeah, it is. And so over the years, the Lord, you know, put me in situations or led me into situations where I could see that, learn how to do that better.
Yeah, yeah, to mix those intercultural and multi-generational. Yeah, it's a challenge, isn't it? So let's go back. When I met you, you were singing and you were writing songs and arranging music. I thought that was just so cool.
And it was an honor to me. I didn't know that God would use me that way. I was focusing more on preparing for preaching and teaching, and so. But I sang some in school and at the local churches that my parents were attending, and we were members. My last few years in high school, God started giving me songs, and I still recall singing one of them at one of our talent shows or whatever. We had the senior class do some things, and people began to respond to the Spirit of God that night, and God gave me an insight that he was going to take me into that kind of world with this music. And from that point on, when I got to college, I went to Oral Roberts University in the fall of 1973. And the Lord gave me this other opportunity. Doors began to just seemingly fly open. Within 6 weeks after I got there, I was on national television doing one of those songs I'd written. And it went from there. We traveled to different places, went 5 national tours, did a couple of albums. We sang in all kinds of settings, all kinds of denominations.
And what was that group called?
That group was called Souls of Fire.
Souls of Fire.
It was started by... Yeah. A brother by the name of Carlton Pearson.
Oh, yeah.
People know him.
Yeah.
And he started that group. He says the vision that he got to start that group was to deal with, he had read this book, Soul on Ice, by Eldridge Cleaver, one of the Black Panthers, former Black Panthers. And God just kind of dropped in his heart the thought of our lives being set ablaze by the fire of God to love people no matter what the ethnicity, no matter what the gender. And so they had been gone about a year and a half when I got there. And so I became a part of that group, and we literally, God just began to open doors. He sang everywhere in the United States and around, even outside of the United States a bit. An evangelist who was alive at the time, his name was Tom Skinner, came and spoke in Tulsa, and Carlton hadn't heard of him, so I asked him to come, and he came. And at that time, he was working for... Oral Roberts Evangelistic Association. So he talked with Oral Roberts about it. Tom came and spoke, and after he spoke, Oral came in, as we used to call him affectionately, he came in and in tears. And Tom spoke that day about providing some of the same options in inner city America that was happening at ORU. And so they worked on it, and overnight we were all over the country singing, preaching, ministering in virtually every kind of setting, Baptist, Methodist, Episcopal.
Isn't that Jesus? It's transformational music.
Catholic, all kinds of places we were ministering in, different age groups and so forth.
So then you came to St. Louis, and you started your church, Metro Christian Worship Center. What possessed you to start a church rather than just traveling around singing, or did you do them both?
I was continuing to travel some in those first few years, but what possessed me to do it was, even prior to doing what we were doing at Oral Roberts University, God had convinced me that that was part of the call, and that he would just simply let me know when he wanted that to happen. When I left Oral Roberts, I was an itinerant evangelist for about 4 or 5 years. It was during that time that I met the woman who is now my wife,
Brenda Green,
going on 39 years. I went to graduate school at what is now Regent University. And when I left there, the Lord made it clear to me it was time. And so our local church there laid hands on us, released us, came back. And we started primarily with a prayer group, mostly family, just about, and a few visitors here and there. And then a year later, planted this local church in my mom and dad's den, And we kind of went from there. As God gave us open doors and opportunities, we would minister in what we called at the time Urban Music Fest in the streets.
Mm-hmm. I remember those.
You know, yeah. Like at your guys' place back in the day when we were coming to New
Life. At
Lock,
New Life and, Evangelistic Center, Channel 24, yep.
Jails, wherever we could go. And we just continued. And it was a new, back in that time, it was a new sound. We were still fairly young in our, me in my early 30s and all of that. So our heart was to be involved in an urban community that the Lord told us to go to where we could really, you know, provide a kind of a model, not the model, but a model of what it's like to have the kind of relationship with God that God really wants with human beings. And that's how we related it. I tried to, you know, adjust the language for people that weren't necessarily in church and those that were who kind of remembered it back in the day when there was a different kind of thing going on. So, and God blessed all of that. I mean, he, for a while we were, you know, growing by leaps and bounds and things were just super. But, you know, of course, that leveled off and things changed a lot. But we decided to just stay faithful to what God called us to do.
How was that as things leveled off and you was it tough?
Yeah, it was. It felt devastating. You asked the same old questions over and over that most people do. What am I doing wrong? What am I missing? Why is this happening like this?
And what did God show you through that?
He showed me some of the stuff I was doing wrong in terms of just my expectations. And part of it had to do with, I shared this with the congregation where I served. Part of it he showed me had to do with being able to really adjust and change as various persons came in and that became the predominant group. I didn't always make that adjustment well. When we first started, we had a lot of folks who were already churched, who some of whom, not all, but some of whom left other churches who identified with us and what we were about and the style and so forth. But as time ensued, you know, some of those people moved on to other places needing more than what we could give them.
So we'll come back after the break and talk a little bit more about the challenge of change and also how do we reach this urban population for Christ of all ages. So I'm Judy Rutlick. This is Encounter. Thanks for sticking with us. Check out more of my interviews at judyrutlick.com. That's judyrutlick.com. Or email me at jrutlickspeaks@gmail.com.
Friend me on Facebook. Connect with me on LinkedIn.
I'm Judy Rutlick. Thanks a lot for sticking with us on Encounter. If you've just joined us, my guest is Bishop Raphael Green, pastor of Metropolitan Christian Worship Center. That is in South City at 3452 Potomac Avenue, right in the heart of South City. Before the break, we were talking about the challenge of change. What are some tips that you can give pastors who might have gone through the same thing you went through?
Well, I'm not sure how much of the help. It all seems to be so different. But one of the things that we learned is that change is necessary, but it must not be allowed to become the dictator of your strategy. By that, I mean we have to distinguish between what's negotiable and what's non-negotiable, and then find ways to be true to God according to the word of God with the message, and then change the method if necessary to accomplish what God has sent you here to do. And I think the thing that I wasn't always expecting was the resistance that would come from persons that you were really trying to help for various reasons. And then sometimes, you know, the confusion that stirs up even within your own ranks in the midst of all of that. And so, but change is important. Another thing about change is that, you know, change comes in phases. You have that initial phase, Then you have what's called transition, which is kind of like what a birth mother goes through when she reaches the point of transition just before giving birth. It's about 9 centimeters, and then it seems like all hell breaks loose,
yeah,
so to speak, and our change in a government when there are coup d'etats and that kind of thing. And so, you know, we kind of learn to live through that and understand that what's really going on is necessary, though it is not always the dictator of what your decisions need to be. And by that, I mean, as well, sometimes we had to make decisions that we knew would result in a further loss or would result in further delays in accomplishing some of the things that God wanted us to do. Also, it led to, you know, for me, I don't know if this is true with everybody else, but it led to me really learning to distinguish between what I was depending on, who I was depending upon in terms of my own personal development and image and all of that, what I actually call success or understood as success. All of that's drastically, quote, changed through this entire process. God impressed upon my heart this thought that certain things he did not allow in my life or in the life of the congregation that we serve and lead, because in my heart, there was an unhealthy connection between my personal sense of worth and the fulfillment of the promises of God. And that threw me for a while. I didn't understand that statement that he spoke, but he dealt with me and showed me that in some ways what I was living for was a real sense of affirmation that he had already given.
Rather than looking to the Lord for that affirmation.
Exactly.
Boy, I think we all get caught up in that. I do that too. And it's like, Lord, I'm really trying to serve you, but Lord, I just need that little encouragement from others. And we don't always get that. Walking alone often happens with God, isn't it?
Except very much so. And then for me too, as well, it's, you know, the deeper thing for me was acknowledging that there were latent expectations. In some ways, expectations that I thought weren't there. I didn't want to be famous and all of that, but I did expect a stronger, healthier, more robust kinds of results in light of what we were at least attempting to do. And when that didn't happen, it had almost a devastating effect on my understanding of myself and what we're really doing. And it was healthy in this sense. It led me back to God to really take a look at what my expectations really are. I think all of us say we're not really in this for attention and, you know, visibility and all of that. We're just wanting to serve God. And that's true. But there's still some many times hidden expectations about what we expect God to do, what we want God to do while we are in this hidden place, quote, and at least in our minds, thinking that we're serving faithfully.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe some of you pastors are out there, and maybe some of your parents are out there, and people who are in leadership and thinking, God, where are the fruits that you said would happen as a result of my being faithful to you? So let's take a little jump here to the church leader, the pastor who has an urban church ministry. And they might see their churches shrinking in size and wondering, how do I deal with this in myself, but yet how can I reach people for Christ in my community if my church membership is shrinking?
That's a great question. I know we've asked it, and one of the things that God showed me was that you're not called to reach everybody. You try to become all things to all men that you might by any means save some. But typically, God is very organized and very strategic. He sends you based upon who he called you to be, your personality, your temperament, your skill set. He calls you to reach not necessarily only one demographic, but there seems to be a predominant one. And as you get involved in ministering in a city, that's a pretty diverse group of people and persons that are educated. You have people that are not educated. You have folks who come out of gang life, that come out of drug life. You have people that don't come out of that, but they're there in the city. You have people that are into the arts. You have those who are more corporate and professional. There are all kinds of mixes when you come together. So you need to not necessarily always know who it is that God has called you to reach. I know that goes against the grain of what people say. But you need to really kind of understand what God has called you to do, what message he's giving you. Really love people, reach out and minister to them, and decide to serve the ones that God brings and the ones that you're able to reach when you hit the streets. Spend time adjusting to that and also discerning who it is that God has really brought through those doors or that's taking you out in the community to reach. I think in some ways when you study urban life, you know, the demographics on that are really, really wide and very diverse as well. And so you've got inner city, you've got inner urban, you've got outer city, you've got the suburban regions, and they tend to be predominantly certain types. There are certain types of goals and mindsets in all those different sections and areas of that region. There are a number of missiologists that served in urban communities. Some of the ones I've studied, they were outside of America, and in some ways they kind of dominate the urban studies, urban missionary types of programs in the seminaries and things. But for those of us who are kind of working in predominantly African-American and black and brown communities, there are scholars available, practitioners available, but their works aren't quite as predominant. And so we found that we really kind of had to just, here's the key, you know, seek God, really talk to God, learn what you can, look around, find out what other people are doing, but also really seek God. Let God literally give you the strategy that he knows is going to work in that given area. I guess the third thing is acknowledging the fact that even when you obey the Lord, you know, people are free moral agents. They accept it, they don't accept it. They choose it, they don't choose it. When God calls you to serve, there's no guarantee that even when you follow through on the strategy that he gives you, that the vast majority of the people that you're there for are going to receive it. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. That's another lesson we learned. There are some that really do. I can recall the number of times being told by those who would come and we would distribute baskets of food or other goods. That's all they would come to, and they would be there faithfully. A lady stopped me once and said, you know, I don't want you to be discouraged at all. She saw my faith. She said, you have no idea about this. She said, but you literally helped me raise my family, feed my family.
Wow, that's amazing.
Thank you. And the list goes on and on. Another lady who split her arm open trying to bust through one of our doors to get our attention. And I mean, literally split her arm. She was high as she could be and so forth. And I had some ladies come and minister to her because she wasn't dressed properly from her head to her waist. And then after she got dressed and everything, I went and talked with her. And I didn't see her for years. She came for a while and I walked into a Dollar Tree and she said, you don't know me, do you? And I said, I recognize your eyes, but I'm sorry, I don't remember. She said, I'm the lady that you helped. Just want you to know I gave my life to Christ. I'm in a good church now. You know, people, planting, you're watering.
Yeah.
The way I envisioned it, you know, she would come there. She'd be where we are. We would kind of help raise her up in God all the way.
And that didn't happen, did it?
That didn't happen. And I took that as failure on my part. What did we not do? What could we have done better? And those are all legitimate questions to ask, because sometimes it is failure on my part. Sometimes we didn't do what we should have done. And then there are times when it's taken out of our hands to make choices.
So we have about 30 seconds left, Bishop Green. What would you like to say to pastors who are struggling or pastors
who
are
looking for
answers?
There is no substitute for prayer life. In God, especially when you're working in pastoral ministry, spending time with God, conversing with God, responding to God. And then secondly, operating in the wisdom that he actually gives us, the wisdom and love that he gives us with all of the expectations that we know about on the table, and making a life commitment that we're going to follow through, no matter what it looks like at the end of the day, according to the world's measurements. I'll say this in close. A few months ago at the end of a local service, the Lord showed me a report card. And, you know, like you get back in the day when we were in school, and there were two sets of grades. And one set of grades came from God. Another set of grades came from the culture, from the world. And he said very clearly to me, don't build your life and ministry based upon the grades you get from culture. Look to what grade I give you, how I respond to what you're doing. And you must be careful never to judge your effectiveness by what the culture says, even in the church culture. Respond to what I'm saying, do in places where you need to change. I'm going to show you that. And the fruitfulness, as we all know, is not just numerical. It is numerical when it's of God, but it's more importantly spiritual. And be willing to give that the priority.
Priority. Wise words from Bishop Raphael Green, pastor of Metropolitan Christian Worship Center in St. Louis. This has been Encounter. I'm Judy Redlich. Thank you, Bishop Green, for being my guest, and thank you all. And I hope that you'll chew on some of the things we talked about today and join us next time for another Encounter.
Great to be with you.
This has been Encounter with Judy Redlich, informing listeners on local Christian events and matters that affect your lives. Spread the word and invite people to listen to Encounter on KSIV or online at botradionetwork.com.